Dan, Adam, thank you for the warm welcomes. Everyone else, thanks for being here. Evening all, Tony Kibbucks, a gambler. Last gamble, 31st of October 2016. Yeah, you know, get the gamblers on this programme. Step one. I probably knew step one before I knew what step one was, but I'll come back to that. You know, we've all got our different reasons why we gambled and how we came about the gambling. My home life was, you know, hectic, shall we say. Loving mother, dad, who probably loved me, but in his own way, couldn't show love. He was a compulsive gambler. It was, you know, quite difficult growing up in the household. And I tried to find, I suppose, solace somewhere. You know, there was gambling in the family, cards, you know, machines, etc. But I found solace in gambling on my own. Even in, you know, you had to be 18 to go in the arcades, or supposedly, you know, I was in there at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 kind of thing. And gambling any money that I could have, get, find, beg, borrow, steal, you know, just to have the lure, the buzz of the flashy lights and to win money to only go and gamble and put it in again. You know, I had a couple of paper rounds as a child. You know, three, I think I had two or three in one go. All weathers, you know, what young teenager is going to want to be out getting up early in the morning and walking in the dark, in the rain, in the snow, delivering papers? Me, because it gave me money. It gave me money to gamble with. There was a time where after my parents split up when I was 12, 13, I had another paper round when we moved, and I delivered the papers. It was daily papers instead of just weekly papers. And on a Saturday, there was X amount of doors that I had to knock on to collect the money. You know, and I would steal the money from the people that paid me, go back to the paper shop and tell them that they hadn't paid this week and the next week. Without any thought of any consequences, without any thought of any pain, drama, or hurt that, you know, the person I was stealing from. I was a kind person, but the addiction turned me into someone who wasn't kind and probably didn't care. You know, it got to the stage where my mum, well, I can't remember what, you know, I was youngish, took me to the police station and got them to put me in a police cell and told me, you know, if you don't sort yourself out, this is where you will end up in later life. Not good enough to put any scares on me. You know, I was just carried on gambling, you know. I then became 16 and joined the military, joined the army at 16. I was always going to join the army. So I joined the army at 16 and then was having a, you know, decent wage per se once I'd passed at a training, which was, you know, the lifestyle I was living was just gambling. I'd get paid at the beginning of the month, but it was, you know, it would disappear. But I had my accommodation paid for because it came out of my salary. My three meals a day were already paid for because that came out of my salary. You know, half of my clothes was uniform anyway. I didn't have to find money. I had friends or colleagues or people who I thought were friends. You know, I thought I was very good at hiding my addiction, but when you go out with five people into a pub and you spend 6 hours drinking, 6 hours on a fruit machine, gambling, not talking to them, it's pretty obvious what, you know, you've got a problem, you've got an issue, but I couldn't do anything about it. Couldn't do anything about it. So much so that a couple of years later, I was deployed on operations and responsible for flying in and out of, you know, this is Northern Ireland, so flying in and out of, you know, hostile places to pay people money, you know, flying phone in a helicopter, dropped in with a briefcase, money, cash checks, fly back out again. While you're there, there was a fruit machine in the canteen, and I'd got, if I'm not assisting or dealing with people, I'll be playing that. I've run out of my money, so what do I do? I'll take a little bit out of the pot, take a bit out of the tin. Without thought of the consequences, you put it back, you take more, you put it back, you take more, you put it back. To the stage where, weeks or months down the line, I didn't have the ability to put it back anymore. So I got, correctly found out, court-martialed and sentenced to 6 months in discharge from the service. I appealed against the discharge, but not against the 6 months. And then it got amended or changed to 6 months soldier on. So I went to, military jail for 6 months or four and a half months. And that wasn't enough to shock me into stop gambling. The addiction was still rife in me. You had X amount of money a week, £7 or £5 a week to, survive on. And what you didn't spend just kept up in credit. So when I left, I had, X amount of money given to me. Dropped off at the minibus by the train station. I'm gambling at the train station before I've left the train station. I've just been let out of jail for the consequences of my actions, revolve caused by gambling. And I'm gambling straight away again. Ludicrous, but I couldn't see it. I was just totally rife in the addiction. A couple of years later, then a nine, met a girl, got married, had two children. But just totally still active gambling, active addiction. Didn't help that I was hardly ever there. I think we were married for 7 years, and I spent probably 4 years on operations, and another year training, which, add that to the fact of, there was never any money in the house because of what I was doing. 7 years later, we split up. There's always two sides, isn't there? When you do step four, and who's right and who's wrong, or who's blaming, but, I will take, my own share, and, it's due to me. So that will take us swiftly through to, because I'm aware of the time, to 2000. So I got divorced in 2000. I've been divorced through gambling, still gambling, and now I'm thinking I've got no one to be accountable to. I'm back to being a single person, on a decent wage. I can do what I like, and I did. I know there's individuals, within all the fellowships that have multi addictions. I never had, luckily, if you're going to call it luckily, only had the one addiction, but I have had, and at times had a unhealthy relationship with alcohol. And I was just drinking and gambling, But I thought there was nothing wrong with that. Who was I hurting? Well, I've hurt lots of people. I'd spent, what I'd spent years stealing from people, friends, family, etc. But I cared, but I didn't care at the time because it fed my addiction. So I'm still gambling. Everyone knows I'm a gambler. You think I thought I was very good at, say, hiding it? Not a chance. It's obvious what I'm doing. But I'm just constantly gambling. And then we'll move forward to another 10 years of just, total gambling, total effect in probably my career, my life, my friendships. And it gets to the stage where, I'm in a position of, a great position of trust. And I've stolen, I'm taking my hand in the till and stolen the money again. And this time, sorry, Yeah, we'll go back, sorry, briefly 10 years. So back in 2000, I went to GA. 2001, went to GA for the first time. 15 months. 15 months without gambling. I'd go to the meeting once a week and I'd say I hadn't gambled. I was being truthful, but I wasn't doing any program. I was, you know, what they classify as a dry drunk. I just wasn't gambling, but I was probably still rife with it. So even though I'd stopped, I couldn't wait. I was so glad when I got posted out of the UK into Germany again, because then I could give it, well, there's no GA in Germany, or I'm not looking for one. I can just go back to gambling. And that was my excuse to justify going back to gambling. So we go, you know, switch back to 2010. I've done it again. And this time I think, right, you know, I've gone AWOL. So I've, you know, in the middle of the night, I've got left me, you know, gone out in my car and, you know, just left the base. I'm living in a hotel or B&B for a week, 2 weeks, 10 days, you know, AWOL, gambling everything I've got. Towards the back end of it, the money's run out, so I'm sleeping in my car. I'm spending the day in a library because I'm freezing cold. I've got no, you know, no food, no money. My family are going absolutely, you know, mental because they can't, you know, concerned or worried about me. They can't find me, but I'm off grid. You know, I don't want to be found. I'm aware of not driving my car because I'm thinking it's going to get, you know, up by the ANPR. So I'm going to commit suicide. You know, take the, is it the coward's way out? Is it the way out when you're in the, you know, the bottom and you can't, you know, see any further? I'm going to commit suicide. Not going to use a knife, cut me wrist because, you know, hurt myself. I could go on a ferry, you know, cross channel ferry and throw myself overboard overnight. But I can't do that because I'll get stopped at a customs. Train, find a spot and get knocked over by a train, you know, suicide. Throw myself in front of a train, regardless of the damage it will cause to the driver and the, you know, the problems it will be. So I recce the route, found out where I can be, knew the timings. And as close as it got was, I got knocked over by the speed of the wind of the train going through. But didn't bring myself to do it. Obviously, hence the reason why I'm still here. Contacted my parents, my brother, you know, handing myself back in. A year later, there's another court martial, and I'm back in the same jail 20 years after I was in the first time. Not learnt my lesson. You know, I've been reverted down the ranks. I'm with people who I've been, you know, my peers in, you know, Iraq and places like that, and they are near my waters. But I've not learned, you know, I've not learned a lesson. I've not grown up. I come out of jail again and I'm still gambling, you know, nearly attempted suicide, 2 periods of jail, and I'm still gambling. I'm still gambling. I get posted, you know, from the UK near to Germany, meet a girl, you know, she's, you know, the fair bit younger than me. We sort of met on my leaving do. We start seeing each other. I'm still gambling. I leave the military because I've done my 25 years. Get a nice lump sum and it goes in the bank. And I go in and draw a load out cash because, you know, I'm gambling, I'm drinking, I'm, you know, just money has got no value to me, had no value to me at the time. Myself and this you know lady start getting quite serious. We get engaged and a year later we get married. As we get married, I've already stolen her bank card and I'm, you know, she gets sent straight away for 5 months abroad. I'm in Germany and I'm sitting at her bank account and we've only just got married. What kind of person does that? You know, she comes back 5 months later. I'm in line, you know, I've lost the card, bada bada bada. I have to come clean because I'm going to get caught. Still doesn't stop me. You know, we have a, I'll never give you a child because I can't trust you. We then have a child. I'm stealing from my child, from his bank account. You know, and that was the second time. And then the third, you know, third big strike, shall we say, I do it again. It's 5:30 on a Wednesday morning. And I hear this guttural scream. Guttural scream coming in the bathroom, And I think, ah, she's found out that I've done it again. So she comes in, and I can't even then. I say, look, go to work. You know, we'll talk about it tonight. No, tell me no. I can't even then be honest and say what I've done. So she makes me. I tell her. She's obviously she knows, but you know, she's heard it from me. She goes to work, tells them she needs the day off. Goes to the bank in the town. You know, takes my name off all the joint accounts, take my cards off me, etc. This is before I've been told by Gia that I need to. That night, I went to my first GA meeting in Bath. Second time round. And this time I listened. This time I paid attention. This time I did what was suggested of me. This time I thought, I can't do it anymore. You know, I'm fed up with being fed up. I'm fed up with being beaten. I actually wanted to have some recovery and wanted to do something about it. So I started going every week. You know, it was a half-hour drive. I'd go there every week. I'd listen. I'd do what was suggested of me. I would do what was told of me. I got some service and I started feeling just a little bit better, just a little bit better. You know, and a day became a 2 days, 2 days became a week became a month. Month became a year, you know, a year became 2 years. 2 where we are, you know, coming up for nine years in August this year. Not so 9 years as October. Doing it one day at a time. You know, I've got everything in my life that I ever had, but I could never see. You know, I don't know how the program has managed to open my eyes and my mind to what I need to do and what I don't need to do. But at the moment, it's working. You know, I've got gratitude for everything in life. You know, we have a saying, you know, if this is the worst thing that's happened to you today, has it really been a bad day? Because my worst day would be putting that first bet on, because that's never going to stop at one. One is going to go constantly. You know, when I was 3 years in the program, my knee went and I spent 14 weeks on crutches. After the 12th and 13th week, my mum died the day after my birthday. And I couldn't get there straight away because I couldn't drive. That was August the 6th. September the 6th, my stepdad died. You know, so in 3 months, I've had 3 months on crutches, mum's died, and my stepdad, who was, you know, like my dad for 35 years, he died. I was 3 years in the program. Not once did I think about gambling. You know, I use the program and the people and the tools to help me get through the struggles of life that I was going through. You know, I'm not the only one who this happens to. You know, lots of people across the world, it happens to them. But, you know, that was me and I'm an addict as well. And somehow, and I don't know how, I didn't go back. I didn't place that first bet because that first bet would make the second bet and the second bet would make the third bet. And it would never stop, you know. So here I am now. You know, I do service as much as I can. I'm the, you know, regional treasurer, the regional literature rep. I, you know, co-host the Sunday Zoom meeting. I send in literature for that. I'm always on the other phone for people because there's someone who could be day one who just needs that bit of help, just needs that telling them it's okay, telling them not alone. And if I can, you know, we all could think that we were the worst gambler or we were the big, you know, the biggest loser ever or, you know, it affected us. But me personally, if I can have a bit of peace and quiet in my head, which tells me that life's going okay, and if I can have a day without being active in addiction, I'd like someone else to have that day and that chance that I was given by the advice and the assistance and the kindness of people in the program. So I try to be of service to people because it does me good as well. You know, is it a case of I'm trying to repay for my sins from previous? It might be the case, you know, but I don't really worry about that. You know, I try to live the way I'd like others to treat me. I try to live the best I can, to be the best version of myself today. I've got a wife who loves me. I've got a son who loves me. I've got a family who have re-loved me. Older siblings, two older children, 29, they're now 29 and 30, or 28, sorry, 29 and 28. They've got to love me again because they can see the change in me. I can think I can feel the change in me, but is that my ego telling me I've changed? Which I've got to be very careful for. Other people need to tell me that I've changed, not me. And the program has given me everything. It's given me my life that I always had, but I never chose to take. I can put my head on the pillow of a night time and it's peaceful. I wake up in the morning and it's peaceful because I'm not worrying about where I'm going to get money from or who I've borrowed money from or who I've stolen to or what lies I've told. I've just got life problems like we all have. But it's not a problem of a active gambler. It's just a gambler in recovery, which I will take because the 12 steps has enabled me and the program has enabled me to find my defects, which are many, and to try to change them bit by bit. I could stop that gambling when I came back day one, 31st of October 2016, but my defect is still here. They will take for a long time to ever to erode and to chip away at, but I'm progress in the making and I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful to everyone in the program, whether you're day one, whether you're day 50, because everyone's got a bit of knowledge that I can take. It's a selfless program as well, because we want to use and take everyone's advice to make us better, as well as giving our advice to them to hopefully make other people better. Wherever you are in your own respective recovery, I wish you all the best. It's not easy. If it was easy, you wouldn't need the program. But we've got the program and it works for us. I wish you all well. Take care, everybody. Tony the Books number.
Thank you so much, Tony. Great share. I'm really grateful for that. We'll open the room up now to anybody who would like to share back to either Tony with a question or anything that's on their heart and mind. Please feel free to raise your virtual hand. And we'll get started now, Patricia. You have a question? Is it for Tony?
Yes, I have a question. Thank you, Tony, for your sharing. And I really appreciate that I joined a little bit late. My question is, we all learn from you. What would be your advice when you have an urge, like about to relapse, to go to not to go to casino, other than calling other people? How you turn yourself away going to casino? You're about to relapse, but I just want to learn your tips and advice. Thank you.
Thanks for the question, Patricia. I think you need, I needed to be ready to stop. I spent, 15, 20 years of, I'm not going to gamble tomorrow, and I did. I'm not going to gamble the next payday, and I did. I think it's, I had a mental decision of, I can't do this anymore because I've had 10, 20, 50, 100, 200 times of it happening before. And I just couldn't do it anymore because I don't think after my, as I mentioned, my, nigh on suicide, I don't think I could take a relapse. I know I've got another bet inside me, but I don't think I've got a recovery from a relapse inside me. And I don't want to put it to that test. And I've built so much in my life that is positive that I don't want to take it back to negative. And I'll remind myself of, I'm 8.5, 9 years clean. And it's sometimes easy for me to think how much pain I was in and how much pain I caused others. But I quickly remind myself of, do I want to be back at day one again? Do I want to be back in the misery? I don't. So find something else to give me the dopamine hit or the pleasure of my perceived bet, because it's not pleasure, it's just carnage.
Thanks for answering that question, Tony. Dan's in with a question now.
Yes, and again, Tony, amazing, amazing share, and I really, really appreciate you coming over and to our meeting and being of service and doing that for us. So the question I have for you is, you know, as we work through and we try to get past some of the character defects or try to reduce some of them as we get through a recovery, have you found that there was any particular defect or any situation challenge in your recovery that was exceptionally difficult or more difficult than others? And more importantly, what did you do? How did you get past that, if you got past that?
Thanks, Dan. You know, I've got so many character defects. I had so many. I've still got them. They might just be not as large as they were. Probably a couple off the top of my head, maybe of, you know, my thought process, my own self-importance, where it's not trying to see things from other people's point of view. I was very easy at seeing it from my point of view and not the other person's. And the effect of what I say or what others might say and how they might feel. But I think, you know, the one that definitely steps out is my frustration, dare I say, anger or ability. I drive an hour to work every day and I drive an hour back from work every day. You know, and it's the other drivers who I think are doing incorrect things. And I used to get very angry. I'd used to prefer, you know, there was days where I'd like to climb in their vehicle, drag them out, and do nice things to them. And what would be the point of that? You know, who would that be? What? But like, you know, what would I get from it? So now I try to think, well, what day are they having? You know, there's times where I cut someone up accidentally. That's what they, you know, that's what someone does to me. You know, it's an accident. They might have issues that they're going on. You know, I never know what someone's going through. See life from their shoes, not just my shoes. So I just try to stay more calm and relaxed because, yes, I can shout at them or beat the horn, but what does it do? And someone said to me once, you know, and you know, we hear all these wonderful, you know, all these wonderful snippets, you know, and little, you know, sound bites in the program that are, you know, words of wisdom, but you know, if you have anger for someone, you're the one with the poison, and you're just going to kill yourself, or words like that. You know, don't try to kill yourself with someone else's anger and poison. So I just try to stay calm, and yeah, doesn't always work, but it works a lot more than it used to.
That's so interesting, and it's so good to know that there's traffic problems and concerns across the pond, not just here in Los Angeles. You can imagine what the LA freeways are like. And this was one of my major, now that you bring it up, it was one of my major issues. I always got upset and angry, almost like I was going to work every time I got behind that wheel, like just about everybody doing the wrong thing and doing everything else. And with my sponsor's assistance and guidance, you know, I'm supposed to practice my way out of that. So little sticky notes everywhere in the car, at home, before I leave, reminding me. And it took me months and months and months of keep doing it. And eventually I came to a point today, and I'm not trying to brag too much, but it doesn't matter what happens out there, because technically I have no control really over other people's thinking and actions. And the only thing I can control is me not getting really upset and so worked up. I remember many times it took me over an hour to get to work. And by the time I got to work, I was already spent. I had no more energy for work alone because I did so much in the traffic. So, yeah, anger seems to be one of the ones. And thank you for that. Thank you for reminding me and letting me, because once in a while I'll find myself going backwards, you know, and that's not good. So, thank you for that. Appreciate it. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks, Dan. I was going to ask a question myself. Tony, as somebody myself who I get the occasional request of becoming a sponsor for some people in the program. kind of how many sponsees do you have?
None. I can qualify that, and the reason, well, no actual official sponsees. So, I've done the steps once, and I've done them with myself because I never had a sponsor. I didn't get my sponsor until I was probably 6 and a half, 7 years in. Don't know why. I just never had a sponsor. I was doing lots of service, this, that, and the other. Just never had an actual official sponsor. I had, individuals who I could gain guidance through, but I never did step one going through. So then, trying to then find a sponsor when you're 7 years in, 6 years in, is a lot easier thing. But found a sponsor, and started doing the steps. And I've probably, I had a couple of operations last year, which has put me back in, in progress. No excuse, but it's an honest answer. We can be honest with ourselves. So I can be honest now, that, there is a justification. So I probably had to refuse or decline six requests to be sponsors over the last couple of years because I've not done the steps properly myself, and it's unfair and it's incorrect for me to be a sponsor if I've not gone through the steps with a sponsor. How can I do it and have sponsees? I do keep myself available, to these people as a unofficial advisor, shall we say, just for someone to, sort their thinking with. But certainly don't, don't take them through the steps. But that said, once I have done, completed step 12, and in a position to do so, it'll be a case of, waiting for individuals who think I could be a good fit for them, discussing if they could be a good fit for me, and, then taking on, taking people on. So it's certainly a case of no, it's not a no. It's just I've got none at the moment, and I'm not going to have any for that honest reason. Thanks for the question, Adam.
Thanks a lot, Tony. Appreciate that. We'll go to Tony F now.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for the experience, strength, and hope. Tony F, compulsive gambler. I'm just wondering, how did you put to rest guilt and remorse, and when and if did you ever have a spiritual, sort of a spiritual awakening in the program? Thanks.
Thanks, Tony. I would say it was at post funeral of either my mum or my stepdad. We were in my sister's kitchen, some of the family members, numerous people in the house. We were just having, tea or chatting, and they said, you need to give yourself. I said, what do you mean? They said, well, mum had spent, 80 years with you, or 75 years with you as a compulsive gambler. She spent the last 3 years of you in recovery, and she knew these last 3 years that when you said you weren't gambling, she knew you were telling the truth. Whereas the previous 40 years, she'd know you were lying. So they said, stop beating yourself up. You won't be able to recover. And this is non-fellowship people telling me, but, family, you won't be able to recover until you forgive yourself. So forgive yourself and start moving forward. And I think that was the probably the moment I would say that made me think, right, okay, kick up the bum. What's done is done. I can't change what I've done. But I can change, even though, I was 3 years in it clean at the time. I can change what I do going forward. I can change what I can do in the future. Let my actions be my words. Don't say what I'm going to do. Show what I'm doing. And that's what I've tried to do. I've tried to let my actions speak how my recovery is by how I conduct myself, how I treat other people, what I do. So that would have been a moment being told by my family to forgive myself. and to, you know, let it accelerate my recovery, shall we say.
Thank you very
Thanks
much.
a lot. And is there anybody else with any questions for Tony? If
You know,
so, we.
I have one in the chat, Adam, and just give me
Yeah.
1 second so I can go back. I lost it now. It's coming from one of our members here. Oh, okay. Can you please talk briefly on fear and guilt and in recovery? I guess it would be probably the question is how does that affect my recovery, or how does guilt or fear, you know?
Yeah. You know, on the guilt side of life, you know, I said I've got, you know, 3 children, second marriage. I've got a 29-year-old, a 28-year-old, and a 10-year-old. And the 2 adult children, have got a slight resentment, you know, to my 10-year-old. You know, they're stepbrother, their half brother. Because he's never known me in addiction. You know, I was gambling when he was a baby, but he was not aware of it, and he knows I do 3 meetings a week, and he doesn't know why yet. You know, I've got guilt for what I put them through, and I've got guilt for what I've done. But I try to deal with that guilt by not doing another action to make that guilt worse. You know, I can deal with my guilty actions in the past if they stay in my past, and if I don't do anything else to be more guilty for, by the way I try to live my life, by the way I try to keep my side of the street clean. And I try to deal with my fears by realizing that, are they really fears, or are they just opportunities to conquer things that I perceive as a fear? You know, I would say my fear is putting on that first bet. But it's at the moment, you know, I certainly don't want to be complacent, because it's only literally around the corner potentially. You know, every day I go, I'm closer to my next bet because I'm further along the road of recovery. But I fear, if I had to say what my fear was, I know I've got another bet inside me, but I haven't got, you know, I don't know if I've got another, you know, recovery from a relapse inside me. So therefore, don't put it to the test, and don't be fearful of it, but embrace my recovery so that I don't have to be fearful of that bet, because I hope it doesn't come.
Thank you so much. Was there a, we've got George B with his hand up.
Hello, everybody, and hello, Tony P. So thank you so much for your share. Really enjoyed listening to it, and really related to so much. You know, I'm serving a prison sentence now. I'm serving a 23-year sentence, and I committed a terrible crime because of my addiction. And I heard that you were locked up for some time in the military jail, but here it's the opposite. Here I mean, if I wanted to gamble, I can do it right away and after 1 minute, you know. So I relapsed in the prison 3 years ago in January 2022. But now I'm working with two sponsors, one in NA, one in GA, and things. I'm enjoying life now. Although I'm locked, I have never enjoyed life so much. But anyway, I have another question, because prayer and meditation really helps me now to deal with life. And I would like to ask you, what is your routine for prayer and meditation, if you have any?
You know, trying to bring in a, you know, the honest answer, bringing in my life as well into this kind of thing. You know, I work quite hard. You know, I'm up at 6 in the morning, leave the house quarter past seven, get back home at 6 o'clock at night. And I got to have tea, see me son, see the wife, prepare for work tomorrow. So it's difficult trying to find light time. So, you know, I'm 54, overweight. Difficult trying to find a time to do any fitness. So it's easy to say I can't find time. You know, just as like easy to say I'm a compulsive gambler, I can't stop. And I was in addiction. So I started, set my alarm for 5:30 in the morning, and being at the local swimming pool for 6 o'clock. So I started about 4 or 5 months ago, and I just swim some lengths first thing in the morning. Started off doing about 18. Now I do 30 a morning every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I did 60 last Sunday because set me alarm at 6:30 last Sunday. Did 60 lengths, so I had more time. And what I do for, you know, my way of getting my prayer meditation, shall we say, is as I'm doing my lengths, in my head, I'll just go 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 2. Not because I can't count, and not because I forget how many lengths I've done, but just for that half an hour, or that 60 minutes, I'm thinking of nothing other than just counting. You know, my mind's at peace. My body's at peace. It's swimming. Whatever work problems there are, they're left outside. Whatever life problems there are, they're left outside. Any home problems, they're left outside. And I'm just swimming. And that is how I deal with it, by putting me into, you know, a better, for me, spiritual place, because I'm just getting that me time to reset myself. And it's first thing in the morning, and it sets me up for the day well.
Well, thank you for that, Tony and yeah. George.
Says, just a short thing. I went to a meeting, a Gambler's Anonymous meeting, and a person said, she said that God can move mountains, you bring the shovel. But I changed it. I like it. God can move mountains, you shovel. You know, you get the rubble, the mountain, the rocks, and move it. God says, don't commit suicide, don't commit crime, do good. I don't know what God says, but it makes sense to me. Like, if God's like a good person, say you can make the world wonderful and heaven and everything, and stop gambling. So that makes sense. God can move mountains, you shovel, and without pass. Thank you, Brother Tony. Adam.